This is a Media Lab podcast. Hello there. This is Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC, which is located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. This is a podcast where I get to talk to artists and creative entrepreneurs. One of the many things that has been impacted over the last, 2.5 months with COVID-19 shutting down so many gathering places is the inability to go and experience live theater. Yes, there are those pro shot productions that you can watch online currently. There are even independent creators who are actually putting on productions that they film themselves. But there is something that is missing. And that is something that Savannah Harvey was able to fill me in on a little bit. She's helping to run the Ignite Festival here in Calgary starting next week and running for 4 days from June 10th to 13th. Now, she'll go into a lot more detail about what that actually entails, but what she was able to fill me in on was the craft of theater and learning how to actually become your own producer. I also think I need to point out here at the top of the show that, unless I guess you have not been consuming any news over the last few days, you'll probably know about the protests that are happening all around the world. The senseless death of George Floyd really highlights the fact that has been repeated over and over and over again by Black people who are consistently targeted just for their skin color. I just want to let people know that I stand with them, that Black Lives Matter, and that by protesting, you are standing up for a better world. I want to live in that better world. If you check out the About section of some of the productions that will be happening during this now online Ignite Fest, you'll see that there are a few that involve Black creators. The one that I'm actually the most excited to check out, just for my own part, is the one that is called RE New, RE colon New, which is described as a multidisciplinary dance film that is at once gradual, gentle, violent, and chaotic. So I'm excited to check that out. And I know it sounds crass after what I just mentioned, but I'm going to thank some sponsors. And then when I return, I'll be talking with Savannah Harvey. Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Creative Block is brought to you by Storylines, a podcast from Women in Film and Television Alberta. Storylines highlights some of our province's most successful women in film and television, both behind the camera and in front of it. Host Sheena Rossiter is herself a filmmaker, and she has had some deep and instructive conversations with trailblazers and experts in the field. A recent episode that you might find interesting is her conversation with Tasha Hubbard. It's co-titled Telling Indigenous Stories. So the description here is, we heard from award-winning Cree filmmaker Tasha Hubbard. She speaks with Storylines host Sheena Rossiter about how she got into documentary film, the importance of telling Indigenous stories, and the success of her most recent film. You can find Storylines on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at wifta.ca. That's wifta.ca. This week, we're also sponsored with Pod Power. With Pod Power, ATB is making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, we're giving a Pod Power shout-out to That's Food, a new podcast from CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. That's Food explores the backstory of food in Edmonton one meal at a time. It's handmade with love by University of Alberta students. And if you're stuck at home and running out of ideas about what to cook, they're releasing new stories about some of their favorite quarantine recipes. You can listen to That's Food on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download podcasts. You can find it at thatsfood.transistor.fm. Savannah, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I would love it if you could just explain a little bit about who you are and what it is that you currently do.
Yeah, totally. So my name is Savannah Harvey, and I am a many-hatted human in Calgary. I am.
You can't see it right now, but there are many hats she is wearing currently.
Yes, so many. They're all just stacked on top.
That's right.
So I'm a freelance artistic producer of live events. In practice, that looks like me being involved with several different organizations and several different events over the course of the year. And then I am also an artist as well. So I am what is called a creator performer, as well as a collective creation, collaborative creation, devising type human.
So this might be a bit of an unfair question, but in this world now of COVID and trying not to like form groups of too many people at the same time, why do you think live theater is still relevant?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that we noticed when isolation started was that it is very much isolating. And lots of folks were finding themselves disconnected from their communities, and the need to gather, the need to be together, to be social creatures, became very apparent that it's just not the same when it's done digitally. There's certainly ways that we can do it, and there's ways that we can do it better, but it's always going to be an approximation of the real thing. So I think as great as it was that we were able to, you know, stream a lot of content and host a lot of concerts and, you know, even use some of the tools at our disposal, like Facebook watch parties, you know, it's still just not the same thing.
What's your favorite part of live theater?
I would say when things go wrong or when things go off script, those are my favorite moments. Especially those magical little moments. And like, you get them a lot with clown shows, for example, but when you have those golden moments of the audience collaborating just so perfectly, you know, that it could practically be scripted.
Are you familiar with Zero Mostel by any chance?
I'm not, no.
Okay. So old-timey actor originated the role of Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. But he was notorious because he got bored very quickly of just making stuff up on stage every night, because it was like, I just don't want to do the same thing every night. And this is true because he actually originated a role in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum as well. He would do the same thing, and it would drive his cast members nuts, because it's like they just never knew what he was going to do, or if he was going to go off script. But at the same time, they said that was also the real fun of it too, because it's like it wasn't going to be the same thing every night, so he kind of just rolled with it. And it was this like new unique experience that that audience got to be a part of every night.
I can see how that would drive his castmates nuts, though.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go in the Wayback Machine. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Beaumont, which is a small little French town outside of Edmonton, just south of Edmonton. That's how I got into theater. I think it's kind of a common origin story of, you know, drama in high school. My family moved to Beaumont in 2002, so that was the start of grade 9 for me. And it was like this really exciting opportunity to try new things and to reinvent myself. It was the start of like high school. It was a new town. And so I saw that they had a really robust drama program at the Composite High School there. And I was like, I'm going to be a drama kid.
That's how I'm going to self-identify for the next few years. Yeah, for sure. What did you get to do, though? Like, what were the productions you got to be a part of?
We did two productions. So when you were in grade 11 and grade 12, you could participate in the shows. So we did Guys and Dolls and Little Abner were the two big shows that we did.
I mean, I know you just kind of mentioned it here already, but what was it about the theater program that allured you into it in the first place? Like, why was it that your choice and not, I don't know, lacrosse or something else?
Oh, I tried. They wouldn't take me.
Yeah, right.
So I had always been a writer, and I still am, but I find that there comes a point when I'm just spending like too much time alone in a room in my own head. So it's been really nice to discover things like devising or collective creation that still allow me to write it, and it's still something I enjoy doing. But there is something about having a little bit of the friction of a collaborator to riff off of and to push up against that kind of sustains an energy level and an interest level for me. You know, and also plays are way shorter to write the novels.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever quite made it to finishing a novel.
Something I'd like to ask sometimes, just because I love to understand people as they were growing up. Do you recall what, like, you were first obsessed with? And that, you can take that any way that you want to. Do you remember what the first thing you ever became obsessed with was?
I think it was probably reading and writing. My mom was perpetually dragging me out of a corner and, you know, being like, you have to say hello to people and then you can go back to reading your book in the corner. It's rude.
Yeah.
So yeah, huge reader, like especially like sci-fi and fantasy growing up.
Who were your people? Who did you like to read?
Harry Potter. I have a Harry Potter tattoo. But also, you know, things like Isaac Asimov, the Dune series. One of the things I really loved about like sci-fi especially is that element of speculative fiction and looking at, you know, Ursula Le Guin is another great example of, you know, authors who are taking a look at our current times and kind of extrapolating, like, if we continue along this path, this is what it's going to look like, guys, you know, or these are the alternative choices we could make. So I've always been really interested in sci-fi and fantasy, just for the ability to like run those scenarios or also to just like break the rules and make the rules. Like, you know, we invent all these technologies or these magic systems that have like huge creative potential to not be restricted by reality, which is also, you know, kind of fun.
Yeah. You know, something that I've recently discovered is like a lot of people that I am like huge fans of, whether it's in theater or music or whatever it happens to be, like what they love consuming is not necessarily what they enjoy creating. My biggest example, that there's this somewhat obscure, well, actually very obscure musician called John Darnielle who heads up this band called the Mountain Goats. And it's very classically like singer-songwriter stuff, okay? Like that's the style of music he makes. Yet he is the biggest heavy metal fan in the entire world. It's like he's never made it. And I just find that so fascinating. I use that as an example just to lead up to that, because you're mentioning like you consumed a lot of speculative fiction, fantasy, science fiction. Is that what you enjoy to write, or is it something different that you enjoy to write?
I would say like I'm still interested in sci-fi and fantasy. Like genre theater, I think, is really interesting, especially the challenge of trying to create, you know, magic or hyper space travel on stage. Is like, that sounds like a delightful challenge. And like I fairly recently, over the past couple of years, really become interested in things like physical theater and puppetry, where we're not restricted by realism and we can use all of these different imaginative tools where we're not constantly being like, oh my God, we've ripped the suspension of disbelief.
There is always a magic to that when that gets pulled off super well. I'm sure people are going to, I've said this on the podcast before, so I apologize to someone who might have heard this before, but I saw this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Citadel Theater growing up when I was a teenager. And it's, to this day, it blew my mind. And I love that production so much because there's this moment where a couple of the main characters are going to sleep. So they fall asleep in kind of like this meadowy area. And then Puck took his hands onto the grass and pulled it. And the whole set was a blanket that he kind of pulled over top of the two people sleeping. Like, that blew my mind as a 15-year-old kid. Like, that's amazing. How did you just do that? And so there's that challenge that you bring into it when you kind of push into that, I don't know, that realm of type of theater.
Yeah. Just the transformative properties. I think this is one of the reasons I'm becoming obsessed with puppetry, is it's like, you look at what the inherent materiality of a puppet is, and a puppet doesn't have to be like a puppet. It could be anything, like any kind of animated object. And you just find like the inherent magic, the inherent transformative magic in those objects, and it just, yeah, it's mind-blowing.
I mean, I'm sure it's so cliche now, of as a kid who basically grew up in like the 80s and 90s, I'm talking about me, like I have this really deep love of Jim Henson. Like I just love his creations, but it's so true, like the weird thing about puppets is that when they are embodied, you start believing that those are real things, right? I don't know how many stories I've heard of like actors going on doing their like little guest spot on Sesame Street, and they talk to the Elmo puppet, even though the guy who's voicing Elmo is like literally right beside him. Just like, no, I'm talking to Elmo. He's a real thing and a real entity. I think there's a magic to that. So, what did you go to university after high school?
I did. Yeah, it was a time. So,
please tell me more.
I was that kid who just like school was dead easy. I coasted through it. I never did any homework. I never studied. I didn't have to. You know, I got all my homework done in class, and any studying that I had to do, I honestly don't remember studying for anything. I just retained, you know, what I needed to know, and that was enough. But like, then I got to university. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't actually know how to time manage or study. How do you memorize things if it's intentional and it's enough quantity that it doesn't just naturally enter your brain? So I went from being like a really strong student in high school to just totally flunking out my first year of university.
Wow. And where did you go to school?
The U of A. So then I kind of had a good 5 years of just being very lost and confused. and then was able to decide that I was going to take another crack at it. And then, finished my degree and graduated in 2015 with an English major.
Oh, well, I have an English degree as well. So that's that's great. What changed for you then? Like, was there a moment that you can remember that was like, no, I can actually do this and kind of return back to there? Or was it just simple, like, elbow grease, like, we're just going to get the job done?
I knew what the alternative was at that point because I've been working for 5 years. When I was essentially kicked out of university because my grades were so bad, I was like, okay, well, that's fine. I guess, you know, I'll just go out into the world and I'll continue to write and make art. And I don't, you know, I've got a library card. Like, I'll be fine. Who needs school? As I was writing and as I was trying to make stuff, I just realized that the kind of art that I wanted to make, I needed an education to do it. My critical thinking skills, my research skills, they weren't there. And so I think it was in part a certain level of desperation because I knew that I needed it and there was kind of no alternative. So I was going to take as long as it took and just get it done.
So what was the type of art that you wanted to make?
I really enjoy stuff that is a blend of the incredibly stupid and the incredibly smart. Those are my favorite things.
Sure.
So for something to be entertaining, but also really strike you with new ideas or new ways of looking at things or have meaningful critical engagements with the things that are happening in our world and using art as a medium to do that and particularly have it crafted well, I think was kind of the other component of that too. Those are the skills that I felt I really needed to go and learn. And the English major has been just, you know, enormously useful because you take something that is already put together and it's kind of like when you take apart a car to see how it works and then you put it back together again.
Yeah, you have a deeper appreciation of that. One of my biggest takeaways was like first year of my English degree and it was like, whatever, English 101, like this the entry one. And my professor had an entire section of that course where he brought in advertisements from magazines and has deconstructed, like, why did they use this word? Why did they choose this here? What are they trying to actually sell you? Yes, it's a product, but what are they actually trying to sell you? And it is like the biggest eye opener when you start to like break it down, like, oh, okay, I see what you're trying to do. And now that's all I can see anytime an advertisement comes, like, oh, I get what you're trying to do. It's either effective or it's not effective.
I think like in an alternate universe, if I wasn't an artist, I'd probably go into advertising and marketing because it's, there's a lot of similarities. Sure.
No, there is. Was that scary though? So like you get your English degree 2015. Did you have any sense of a plan? Like, okay, now that I have this, this is what my next step is. Or were you back kind of into the world? Be like, I don't know what to do next.
I think a similar journey that a lot of artists go on where it's like, we kind of know what we want our end goal to look like, but then figuring out the journey to get there is like, I don't know. So the way that I've kind of started to find my way as an artist is actually kind of through producing. So when, like, as I was going through this English program, I was realizing that like all of the drama kids were getting to know each other. And I was like, I don't know anybody. Who am I going to make theater with? So I started a YouTube channel that ran for about 2 years where I was kind of doing something similar to what you're doing, where I was like interviewing artists and interviewing companies, just kind of as an excuse to talk to people and get to know them.
Hey, don't reveal my secrets.
Right? And then like kind of through that, I learned, you know, through YouTube and social media culture, I learned a lot of entrepreneurial skills. I learned a lot of marketing skills. And as I was writing shows and trying to figure out how to get them produced, I was like, okay, no one's going to produce them because nobody knows who I am. So I guess I will produce them myself.
Yeah. Now, this is such a dumb question, so I apologize. So when you say producing, that you mean just like making your own stuff, not necessarily like fronting the money for like a company to like make a production.
It's interesting because it's like the definition of producer is definitely a varied one.
Yes.
So I would say when I talk about my producing practice, it's kind of more in the project management. And the sort of the entrepreneurial, like, I have an idea and that we build the correct team and, you know, we figure out how it's going to happen. Yeah, no, I'm not the money banks, but.
It feels like a mini heist film, though, that you're doing, right? It's like getting the crack team to like make this thing work. Yeah,
absolutely. And one of the things I will say is like a lot of the time, it's like we have this great idea, but we need money for it. So, you know, or I've had organizations that have wanted to work with me in various sort of producing capacities, because you can break them down into more specialized streams like fund development or marketing, you know, and they just didn't have the money. So I've gotten quite a few jobs by finding, like writing grants for them to basically hire me. And that's how a lot of projects have come together. That's how a lot of my contracts have been able to pay me.
Do you have any like special tips and tricks for writing grants? I know that this is like the eternal struggle of the arts, right? Of like finding those people and areas that are willing to give you a little bit of money so that you can create the thing that you want. I have the unfortunate personality that I get about 5 minutes in and my eyes glaze over and I can't do it anymore. But do you have any special tips on like how to search for the ones that are going to be appropriate for you?
I think the big one is what I try to do when I read a grant, if they don't provide it already, is to build a rubric. So some grants don't give you a formal rubric, like this X number of points for project feasibility and X number of points for budget and that sort of thing. That's not always broken down, but you can read through the guidelines and based on, you know, the paragraphs of text, you can extrapolate a rubric of sorts. So I find turning chunks and chunks of paragraphs into just bullet points and then trying to categorize them as though you were on the jury and trying to make a rubric can be a really good tool for not just deciding if you're the right fit for that grant, but also when you go to actually write it, it gives you a little bit of the cheat codes in a sense, right? Like in as much as they have told you, you can kind of answer specifically to what they're looking for.
There's a podcast I recently listened to that's been going on for a long time, but one of the co-hosts is this musician who was recently asked to be a part of a jury selection. And that's kind of what he actually mentioned is like so many people like apply and he's like, yeah, you could use money, but you are actually not right for this grant in particular. You could save yourself a lot of time by like really taking the time to do that research and finding the ones that are going to be appropriate for you rather than wasting the time going one that's like, no, this is not going to be a good fit.
Well, and that's always like an interesting question because my roommate always makes fun of me and says I always apply like round peg square hole projects.
Yeah.
Because I like force them to fit. But like, I think it kind of goes back to that English major thing. Like you can make any argument in the world as long as you can back it up with an argument. Like,
sure.
So if you can look at that rubric that you put together and if you can hit most of those points to, I don't want to say you're never lying, but there are ways of spinning things or there are ways of emphasizing certain things and not other things, right? That can make you appear to be a better fit than if you were to provide a different narrative for the same project.
Yeah, this is leading with your strengths, right? Like this is what I'm really strong at and let's really emphasize how I'm strong in these areas. So, I mean, you were up in Edmonton. How did you find your way down to Calgary?
Edmonton was great and has especially such a rad indie scene there. Like their indie arts, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with Fringe, frankly. Mm-hmm. They have just such a rad indie scene.
Yeah, not to throw like Calgary under the bus because I love Calgary, but like the Edmonton Fringe is like something like a step above.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, I'm definitely in the world of indie and that inherently, if you're in theater, tends to also mean the world of Fringe for sure. Mm-hmm. That infrastructure has been transformational to Canadian arts. I mean, one of the things that I had started to identify in school was that I was gaining the skills that I wanted in order to be the kind of artist that I wanted to be, but I wasn't meeting the people. And because there are such strong drama schools in Edmonton, it's like a lot of people meet their collaborators and form their cohort in school. And so they graduate and they've got their crack team put together. So it was just really hard to find collaborators in Edmonton because I hadn't gone through the same sort of program and I hadn't made those sorts of connections. So I had been making stuff I ended up kind of becoming a creator performer sort of through necessity because I didn't have collaborators. I mean, that's kind of how I got into that. Yeah. But I had been trying to collaborate with people for a couple of years. And it's like, it's so hard finding collaborators at that magical mix of just like chemistry and right time and right place that it just wasn't happening. So I figured that moving to Calgary was like, I could still keep all of the connections and all of the hard work that I had accomplished in Edmonton because it's only 3 hours away, but I could also widen my circle of opportunity if I moved to Calgary. So I'd had my eye on moving to Calgary for a while, and then Ghost River Theatre posted for an artistic internship, and I was like, that's the ticket, if I get it.
Yeah.
And I did, so.
Yeah. That's exciting, though. So you got to come down and be a part of Ghost River Theatre. What did that experience give to you?
I got to participate and support there's this massive show that they did. It was in the recent past. And the summer that I was doing my artistic internship with them, they had a big puppet workshop to prototype and design and build all of the puppets for that show. And that's where I really discovered puppetry, I think, was getting to work with alongside like Rob Levers, who was our puppet builder, and work with some puppet designer and work with some amazing puppet builders through that process. I think that was like a really transformative moment. And then also I got to collaborate on a show called The Intuition Project, which was very cool. Yeah, there were some very neat opportunities. And the style of theater that Ghost River does is right up my alley, kind of stuff that's a little bit experimental, pretty ambitious. So it was really great getting to be a part of those artistic processes.
And I guess that makes you a little bit more a part of like the Calgary community here now. I'm sure you're widening your net here a little bit. I think that kind of brings us to current day, where you're now helping out the Ignite Festival that's going to be running here fairly soon. Like, how did that opportunity even present itself?
I'd been an artist here in 2018, actually, not that long ago. I'd been an artist in the festival with my show.
Maybe we should just, I apologize, maybe we should just explain a little bit first, like what Ignite Festival is in the first place.
Yeah, totally. So Ignite is an emerging artist festival. We typically program about 100 plus artists a year, and we have four kind of core series of performing arts. So there's theater, improv, dance, and then something called the Provocation Series, which is curated and developed by Swallow Bicycle Theater. It tends to attract things that are perhaps not quite theater, but still sort of kind of theater. And it typically have a very strong social justice component to them.
And so what did you enter with in 2018?
I was on the Provocation Series.
Oh, yes.
With my garbage puppet show called Wastelands.
So when you say garbage puppet show, does that mean like puppets made out of garbage?
It does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was able to do like a first draft and then like a really very like super useful like workshop of the show. That show is still in development and it's going to premiere actually in March of 2021, hopefully. We'll see how Corona goes. But so it was an amazing development springboard for my project as an artist. We had workshops with some really phenomenal local artists that were asking all kinds of great questions about making art. And I was like, and coming from Edmonton, I mean, we have Next Fest, which is like, they program 400 plus artists in their, that's their emerging artist festival. It's a massive piece of the ecosystem that helps bridge the gap between, you know, finishing say a professional arts program and actually becoming a professionally employed, consistently employed, established artist, because that's a huge gap. And the, like, you know, I sort of addressed it by becoming a producer to get my work out there, but not every artist wants to produce, and not every artist has, you know, the skill sets to produce. So those sorts of pieces of local infrastructure are really important. I obviously experienced that firsthand, actually through both of those festivals, because I've been an artist in Next Fest as well, back when I was in Edmonton.
So how did you find your way then now to like helping run the festival?
Yeah, so 2018 was the last year that Charles Zetto directed the festival. So there was a vacancy. And at this point, I had just started to kind of level up, I guess, my producing career. I'd started to work for some actual arts organizations and not just other indie artists. So I guess, like, as an artist, I have a very strong sort of love of and experience in festivals. I've been an artist in various festivals. I've worked all kinds of different positions in different festivals. So it struck me that that might be like, it would be a bit of a stretch to actually run a festival, but I'd done all of the separate pieces of that across the board. So I kind of gently hounded Jason Memel,
former guest on this podcast.
And I was just like, Hey, I love this festival. I'd love to produce it.
I mean, that has to have its own set of challenges, and especially this year where, again, we've kind of already mentioned it, where, you know, groups of people can't necessarily come out and experience this communally. It is now transferring itself to be online for 4 days. So, I don't know, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, I'm sure there must be deep, like, talks and meetings and strategy behind this, but how did you find your way to not just canceling it, but instead of, like, bringing it onto an online space?
Yeah, so when I produce something, I have a dramaturgical background. So that is a fancy theater word for kind of the person in the room who asks questions and helps keep us kind of on track with whatever North Star the group has decided to head towards. I mean, I guess that's very specific to new play dramaturgy, but that's kind of mainly what my background is in. So this notion of serving the artist and serving the art and asking the sorts of questions that kind of keep it on track, kind of keep it to the core of its soul and what it's kind of meant to be. That same sort of practice is what I bring to my producing. So when we were in that sort of holding pattern around what's going to happen with Corona, how serious is this going to get? As soon as it was evident that, like, oh, okay, quite serious, I knew that going online was an option. We were seeing people talk about it already. And so at the end of the day, it's like, well, this isn't my decision to make. This is the artist's decision to make. So we'll just ask them. And so we reached out to our series curators and we asked them to chat with their artists and talk about, you know, if you had the opportunity to adapt this project to go online, or do you have another project that you could take online that you would be interested in? Is that something that you would like to do? And we just got a resounding yes, please don't cancel our festival. And then from there, it was like, okay, now we just have to figure out how to do it.
Well, I guess we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but like your background of like YouTube creation and then like dabbling a little bit in like the Twitch environment seems like you were like maybe the best person to be the one championing that, because at least you had a bit of an idea of what that entails. It seems like you knew that it wasn't like a completely out of the question thing to be able to transfer this onto online.
Yeah, I think like if I wasn't me, you know, already that interest in digital strategy, I think that like it's all well and good to say whatever the artists want, but you know, it's also your ability to deliver. You know, I knew it would be possible, even if it was, because it's not like we had an online streaming broadcast budget built in.
Right.
But, you know, I knew if we wanted to do something, it was absolutely possible, because we are seeing so many content creators, you know, like consumer level technology, like even a cell phone nowadays can create really fantastic content. Feature films are being shot on iPhones now. Like the technology is there. The technology is pretty accessible and it's pretty high quality to create something that is like passable, right? Yeah. And with it being an emerging artist festival, it's like, this is all about experimentation and trying new things. So, you know, we'll figure it out. But I think it's certainly helpful that, you know, I have a definitely a comfort level in that space and a bit of a like a content creator sort of DIY background for sure.
I mean, I'm excited to see how it goes because, I mean, as a big fan of YouTube for like the last almost 15 years, I guess at this point, this is going back a while now, but there has been people who have adapted things that are in the public domain, but into like a YouTube space. There was this entire series called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which was Pride and Prejudice, but told over like multiple vlog episodes. I forget what the Frankenstein one was called, but they did Frankenstein as well. The same type of concept. And then even in films, there was that movie that came out a couple of years ago called Searching. It starred John Cho. And it was only told from a computer screen. So it was like FaceTime calls and other things that were happening, but it's only told from like that one location. So I think that there's like these really fascinating ways that you can tell stories. There might be a somewhat of a limitation, but I don't know. I always have this idea that some limitations are good for creating art because it forces you to think outside the box a little bit more.
And I think that's one of the big reasons why, even though I was still relatively new to Twitch, I was like, we have to stream on Twitch because all of those audience engagement components are built into the platform. And it's like asking those kinds of questions about if we don't have a physically present live audience, what is that active translation when we go into a digital space? You know, it's the ability to have a chat where you can actually, you know, like the chat bar in Twitch where you can interact with the performer. It's, you know, being able to have a Facebook watch party so that you can have that same experience where you're watching something together with a group of your friends and you get to whisper funny comments to each other. And also like run into the community in the lobby as you gather before a show. Like these are all components of live events that we have to find, I think, in order to really capture the live eventness and not just make not just stream a film. We have to find those active translations and be thinking very intentionally about basically like UX, like the user experience, right?
When is this happening? How can people engage with it? And what are some of the things that they can expect to see?
So the festival, we're keeping the same dates because we want to keep that feeling of event and binging and gathering together for a very concentrated and intense period of time. So the festival runs June 10th to 13th. It's going to be for sure streaming on Twitch. We're in Tech Week right now, so we want to make sure that we have our Twitch stream down. All of the shows are totally good to go. And then sort of like as a step two, if we still have capacity, we're going to be looking into mirroring our stream to other platforms.
Right.
Just to provide people with some options because not a lot of folks, like the audience who is going to be following us are not, I'm assuming, Twitch users. Not many people are Twitch users unless they're gamers. So while it's a super accessible platform, there's going to be a certain newness to it. So, all of that to say, it will for sure be on Twitch. And don't worry, Twitch is very easy. You just follow the link. You'll see the stream. And yeah, all of the evening's programming is going to be on the single Twitch channel. So you just follow one link and it's super easy. It's kind of like tuning into a TV station on a channel. And then you'll watch the entire event's programming. There are two shows that are doing something a little bit more experimental. They're not part of the stream. Those are Good People and Elegant Animal, and you can check out details about those shows on the sagetheater.com website. But those are, one of them, Good People, is an experience, like a kind of a journey across the internet. And then Elegant Animal is a cool piece around self-care where you put together a self-care package and then listen to kind of an audio experience that takes you through a self-care process and kind of asks questions about our culture nowadays and self-care. So those are the only two shows that aren't streaming, but everything else will be available to watch over the stream.
That's over June 10th to 13th.
Correct.
And is it just so I know more than anything, is it basically like one performance after another or are there like set times when things are beginning and ending?
Both, I think, to answer your question. Yeah, we do have a nightly schedule. So again, that's up on the Sage Theater website. We do have a host who we will be able to announce very shortly, but we have fantastic host who is going to be hosting during the intervals between shows. And again, just trying to think about ways that we can still keep that live component. So having someone who can be reactive to a chat, who can directly talk to the camera. These are, you know, all of these tactics that we're trying to use to create a live experience. And cool. I'm really looking forward to announcing our host.
Well, I won't have you drop that that message here today, but I'm curious, what do you hope to go into the future? Like, is it continuing on with producing, or is there other aspirations that you have in mind?
Yeah, I would say, like, I definitely have the balance of the work that I do over the past couple of years has definitely become producer heavy. So I'd like to kind of shift that back a little bit more to do some more artistic work. And that's going to be happening in the next year. So as I said, I've got my show Wastelands opens in March of 2021, which is pretty exciting.
Do you know where that's going to be, where that's going to actually be produced?
Well, it's not officially announced yet, but it's it's in the Festival of Animated Objects, which is pretty exciting. It's a biannual puppet festival here in Calgary. Right now, it's a lot of that holding pattern sort of planning of like, oh my God, like who knows what March is going to look like.
Yeah.
Like hopefully we can gather again. Mm-hmm. But even in talking with my collaborator, Lindsay Zess, it's like, well, you know, we're planning an immersive interactive environment puppet show. Like it's extremely complex just to begin with, like let alone adding in the variable that maybe we also want to build it for streaming as well. So like, we're trying to figure out how to plan for as many scenarios as possible. But yeah, it's just like, it's a weird time to be making art.
Sure. What excites you about being in Calgary for the next few years?
The sort of like potential of the city, I think. Like, you know how I said that coming from Edmonton, which has such a, just like a huge indie theater scene. And it's like, mm-hmm. I can see Calgary, like, not to say it doesn't have an indie scene, because it absolutely does, but like we're starting to see a lot more indie companies pop out, and we're starting to see a lot more collectives making work. And I think that to have a like healthy arts ecosystem, you need biodiversity, right? So I'm really excited to start seeing that we're getting more biodiversity, I guess, in our ecosystem. Because Calgary, from my perception of things, and like, you know, I've only lived here for a couple of years, so like maybe I'm not the best person to make these sorts of grand sweeping judgments.
Sure.
But from what I've seen is it's like, it has a pretty robust professional theater scene here with an indie scene that like has made some killer work, but isn't quite taken as seriously. And I think that's really starting to change. And I think Corona is going to have a huge impact on that, because it's like, you know, smaller companies, collectives, we're just able to adapt and pivot faster than a larger organization is. And that kind of just circles back to the whole point of like, we need a mixture of people making art in various different ways to have a healthy ecosystem.
Not to derail our conversation too much, but like you've hit onto like one of my absolute favorite topics and like little soapboxes I always like to get up on. But I mean, I feel, not that I'm like super, super into the like the creative community here in the city, trying to become more involved, but it's like I see so much talent in this city, and just like how to channel that in the best possible way for the people of Calgary to recognize how much talent is actually in this city. I would love, and the biggest thing I've kind of zeroed in on is that I think too often people like, we need to become like the next Chicago or New York or whatever. It's like, no, let's become the next Calgary and really lean into what makes us like unique and special. And it's just, that's the challenge. Like that's the, like, if I knew how to do that and snap my fingers, you know, I would do it, but I can't. So, I don't know. I don't know if you have any outlook on that as well.
I don't know if it's like a prairie thing. Cause like, I don't know. I lived very, very briefly as a small child in Saskatchewan. Yeah. So we won't count that, cause I was very young, but like, you know, I've lived in Edmonton and Calgary, and it's like, we do have so much talent and so much work ethic here. And it's like, for some odd reason, people need to leave, make it big elsewhere, and then come back before we take them seriously. And it's like,
like why?
They're the same person. They're still making like the same cool stuff that they were like 5 years ago when they originated here. So I think, and again, like to speaking to that potential that I see kind of growing exponentially, it's like we have this movement that's really starting about supporting, you know, local businesses and really embracing our local talent that we have. And I think that that's a really great thing to extend into the arts, because you know, if you, again, we have so much talent here, and it's like, if you want them to make it big, you need to support them before they're big, or they're going to leave. And it's just so frustrating, because I think it's like, there's so many factors to that. And then if we look specifically to this past week, the AFA announcing that they're canceling the individual project grants is like, you know, at a time when our industry is so hard hit, it's like, do you want artists here? Because they can't make a living if you don't support them, you know, whether that's at a government funding level, whether that's at an individual audience level. It's, I'd love to see more talent stay here and work here.
Well, me too. So I would love to thank you for, talking with me here today, Savannah, and like basically solving all the world's problems in 45 minutes. I'm excited to see what the future holds. I'm really excited to check out the Ignite Festival when it comes out next week. When you're listening to this episode here, at least, there'll be links to all that in the show description. If people wanted to, you know, see what you're up to, is there an easy way to do that online?
There is. So there's a bunch of stuff. So on Facebook, you can find the Ignite Festival of Emerging Artists. And then on Twitter and on Instagram, if you look for Sage Theater, because that's who is presenting the festival. And then if you're interested in following me, I am on Facebook at savannah.harvey.art is the page. And then on Twitter, I'm at Savannah_Harvey. None of these Savannahs have H's at the end, for the record. And then Instagram, Savannah_C_Harvey, because someone has my name. So I had to throw an initial in there. And I'm not even using it.
That's the worst. Thank you again, Savannah.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you go. Really great conversation, right? Thanks to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, to Storylines, and to Pod Power this week. If you have suggestions for people you'd like me to talk to, even if that's you, please send those to info@medialabyyc.com. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Let other people know if you enjoy it. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Have a great day.